Well, it's Halloween. We couldn't let it go by without talking a little bit about the spooky and maybe the intriguing people and events that are part of Wisconsin's history. And who better to talk about it than Michael B., who's a travel writer, likes to introduce people to the fascinating history of Wisconsin, its people and places. He's the author of Myths and Mysteries of Wisconsin, True Stories of the Unsolved and the Unexplained. And Michael, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Larry. It's good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. And just for our listeners, is there a place in your community that's supposed to be haunted? Or is there how about a myth or a mystery in your community or a strange event in your community that is still talked about maybe even years and years later? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Wisconsin's full of interesting stories, events, yes, and characters. Let's talk about some of the best, maybe that are kind of Halloween-type topics. Well, murders. There's plenty of murders that we can talk about for sure.
Sure. Well, you know, virtually every community in the state has a sensational case from its history, a murder, a trial, something along those lines. But I found a real doozy in Waupaca, and it's known locally as the case of the headless banker. You know, this concerns the murder of the town banker, Henry Mead, in 1882. And a number of prominent residents of the day were involved. There were several court cases and trials, but nobody was ever convicted of the crime, although it is generally accepted that a group of local residents, some of them prominent, were involved. And if you read the book, we do narrow it down to who the likely trigger man was. But it's known as the headless banker, partly because Banker Mead was killed by a shotgun blast to the head while he worked late at night one night in his bank building, which still exists in Waupaca. And the newspapers love describing great chunks of oozing flesh at the crime scene. But when the third trial took place roughly 10 years later, the prosecution felt they needed a piece of evidence for the trial. So a group of men went to Henry Mead's remains and removed the skull, which, of course, shocked the courtroom as they held up the skull that was, you know, the frontal lobe partly shot off from the shotgun blast. After the trial, nobody was the people were acquitted. Nobody was successfully prosecuted. The evidence went into a box and stayed there at the courthouse, and it was often put on exhibit. And throughout the head,
yeah,
along with a few other items. And school groups would make field trips down to the courthouse to take a look at the headless banker, the head of the headless banker. It wasn't until the 1990s. And keep in mind, this was a crime that was committed in 1882. It wasn't until the 1990s that a local funeral home director petitioned the court and said this no longer serves any evidentiary purpose. And Henry Mead's remains were returned to his remains.
Oh, he got his head back, so to speak. And there were, as you say, we don't want to give it all away, but as you say, there were like all different kinds of people that were accused over time. And
yes, but roughly the same group of people. And it is accepted that this group of people were involved. They could never really pinpoint who actually did it or what their role was. But there's no question that a group of local residents perpetrated this.
Oh. Eric in Oshkosh, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm from Oshkosh, but I go to school up here at Fox Valley Technical College. And I've noticed in walking the grounds that there is a no headstone. There's a sign that says Outagamie County Insane Asylum Cemetery, and it's just a flat piece of ground with no headstones on it. Do you know anything about that?
Nope.
I do not. But the title speaks for itself. Let your imagination run. The Winnebago County Insane Asylum. No, I don't have any background on that.
Or Outagamie County.
Outagamie County.
Outagamie. Yeah, well, that's somebody else probably will. if you know something about it. But my guess is that, yeah, and people who were a part of that insane asylum were probably buried there.
Yes.
And, well, I think they had to tear down the insane asylum at some point when Fox Valley or FETC bought the property, and but they never exhumed the bodies, is what I understand.
Right.
It's just a grove of very spooky-looking cedars with some flat ground in the middle, and I think I might head over there in my lunch hour and see if anything's happening.
There you go.
There you go. Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, like you said, it's likely the cemetery for the patients.
1-800-642-1234. That's the number for you to call. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 with your question, or maybe you've got a story, a myth about, or a mystery, or maybe a haunting in going on in your community. We'd love to hear from you. Here on the University of Wisconsin campus, there are some dandy.
North Hall.
Yeah, North Hall is one of the buildings. And actually, Bascom Hall as well is another, supposedly, is a place. And Memorial Library. Memorial Library. There's actually, on Facebook, there's a YouTube feature video on haunted UW. Mm-hmm. And I remember the librarian supposedly haunts the Memorial Library.
So we're not talking about students who are terrified by their homework assignments.
No. Well, in the North Hall used to be, was it the medical building? There were many bodies that were in and out of that building at one time, and it's. Anyway, supposedly is haunted. Well, that was kind of the headless banker. When you're thinking about murders, that was probably the weirdest one in your book.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, virtually every community in the state has crimes like this. But that story was definitely a doozy. If we're talking about apparitions, ghost mm-hmm. stories, if you will. There's, famous instance, famous instances here in the state of Wisconsin of women who claimed visits from the Virgin Mary. The Catholic Church defines an apparition as an appearance of Jesus Christ, the Virgin Mary, or one of the saints. Now, one of the cases brought all the denouncement that the Catholic Diocese of La Crosse could muster, and that was the case of Mary Ann Van Hoof in Nisita in 1949, and she claimed visits from the Virgin Mary and predicted a number of future visits as well. As many as 70,000 people showed up in Nisita for this. Mm-hmm. Some folks may actually remember this from 1949. But her messages, as the years went on, became increasingly bizarre, and she urged followers to enlist for a spaceship that would be captained by an ancient man named Alex, who would take the followers into the center of the earth after the apocalypse. She also claimed that 30,000 priests were spies for the Soviet Union. So, not surprisingly, yeah, the church began to draw a very hard line, and they began excommunicating anyone associating with the shrine, which still exists in Nisita. But all the while, there was another claim by a young woman named Adele Bryce in the 1800s, 1859, to be exact. She claimed three visits from the Virgin Mary. And this is a story that quietly persisted throughout the years without the fanfare that certainly took place in Nisita later on. It was in 2009 that the bishop in Green Bay initiated a formal investigation into Adele Bryce's visions, apparitions. And a year later, the church decreed that the events, the apparitions given to Adele Bryce exhibit the substance of supernatural character. And the church thereby approved these apparitions as worthy of belief by the Christian faithful. It's the first church-validated apparition in the United States, and it ranks right up there with Fatima and Lourdes, these other famous locations apparitions from around the world.
Wow. Michael B., our guest today, he is the author of Myths and Mysteries of Wisconsin, a fun read. I'm great to have him along today on this Halloween. We're talking about his book and about Ghost stories as well. We got a few of those coming up. Jeff in Columbus, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. Well, there is an interesting article in the State Journal here in the last week or so. I don't remember all the particulars, but I believe it was in the late 1800s or 1860 or 70. And there was a missionary, and I believe it was a Lutheran missionary, that had converted some of the Indian tribes here. And later in life, he moved to California and passed away, but wanted to be buried in Wisconsin. And so they shipped his body back, and there were two other Lutheran ministers attending to him. And one of them stepped out. It was in Wisconsin someplace that the woods was full of ghosts. And he called to the other minister who came out and saw him too. And then the next day they buried this old missionary, and it was photographed. And the old and long dead Indian chiefs that he had converted appeared in the picture, but nobody saw him. And there had never been a picture of that Indian chief.
That appeared, I believe, in this morning's State Journal.
Yeah. It was just in the State Journal. And it's one of those, they're ministers. Seem to be, could be reliable people. And the photo, strange stuff going on. Jeff, thanks a lot for calling. And Michael B., who is author of Myths and Mysteries of Wisconsin, is going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. So I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments. And I think we've already, Judith's already posted the University of Wisconsin haunted thing on our Facebook page, so you can go there and see that video. Back after the news. Well, ghosts and ghouls and strange people are part and parcel of Halloween in Wisconsin. We have our share of creepy stories and scary characters. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Enjoying a Halloween chat with Michael B., travel writer who likes to introduce people to the fascinating story of Wisconsin, its people and places. He's the author of Myths and Mysteries of Wisconsin, True Stories of the Unsolved and Unexplained. And Michael, good to have you with us again.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Hauntings are a huge part of Halloween. Do you have any of those kinds of spooky spots we can talk about?
Well, I don't necessarily have a haunting per se, but we do have a very good paranormal, extraterrestrial type encounter in the book. And that's the case of Joe Simonton, who lived just outside of Eagle River. And Joe Simonton was best known as the guy who played Santa Claus for the annual Eagle River Chamber of Commerce holiday pageant. And he was a well-known and well-respected man in the area. But a lot changed for Joe on April 18th, 1961. And that's when he was sitting in his farmhouse. And he heard a noise that he described as knobby tires on concrete. And he stepped outside his farmhouse and, as he said, was greeted by a flying saucer with three men inside it. They were dressed in black two-piece suits. That's scary right there, thinking about that. But he claims that one of the spacemen held a jug to Joe, that in kind of motion that they wanted the jug filled. So Joe said that he went back in his farmhouse and filled it up with water and returned to the spaceship. When asked what the spacemen looked like, he said they kind of looked like Italians, he thought. But one of the men, apparently one of the spacemen, was cooking on a grill inside the spaceship. And when Simonton pointed toward the grill, the man at the grill handed him three small pancakes. And following this goodwill exchange, the water for pancakes, the spaceship closed up and took off. And Joe Simonton, lived the rest of his days not at all amused that people were
made fun of him.
Made fun of him, and he firmly believed what he had seen and experienced. And everybody who knew Joe, you know, vouched for his character that this isn't something that that he would really do for publicity or anything of the sort. Although I do have to mention that he did enjoy in the years following renting a tuxedo and giving presentations on the on the experience. But he even went so far as having the pancakes tested at a lab, and the lab results came back and said they were made of flour and sugar and cooking oil. But he said they were he said they tasted like cardboard. He had one of them. But that's probably Wisconsin's most famous case of extraterrestrial visits. That story was picked up by the news services worldwide. So in 1961, the story of Joe Simonton in Eagle River, Wisconsin, was carried throughout the world.
Oh, yeah. Dan Satran.
Yes.
Was the guy who really, the editor-publisher up there.
Yes. Of the news review.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that shortly after Joe claimed his visit from aliens, he was meeting with some folks from the Chicago Sun-Times, and they all decided to jump in the car and go over and talk to Joe. And being good reporters, they took notes and put the story on the wire service, and from there it took off.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you what, it's a good spooky one. We have a Wisconsin Life piece about a spooky Wisconsin spot, and I wanted to kind of use that. We have our share of frightening stories and spooky places. Producer Aubrey Ralph recently visited a hotel that has been welcoming guests and ghosts for decades.
My friends Cynthia, Tessa, and I are on our way to the Retlaw Plaza Hotel in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. It was built in the early 20s by hotel magnate Walter Schrader. Retlaw is Walter, spelled backwards. The hotel was once a jewel of the city, but that's not why we're here. We're here because we've heard that Walter, almost 50 years after his death, still walks the halls. Opened in March of 1923, the hotel really was a jewel, built from the finest materials available. It played host to the rich and famous, and with the secret tunnel leading to the secret bar across the street, it was also home to those who just wanted a prohibition-defying drink before bed. With its ornate chandeliers and sculpted plaster, it could be the set for any number of movies, but now it seems to be home to a ghost story.
There is Aubrey, right?
Yes. After checking in, okay. The first thing I want to do is talk to the staff.
Has anything weird ever happened to you?
Well, yeah, my cups have gone flying off my cart before.
Really?
Yeah. I was in a room and all of a sudden I heard my cups go flying and I looked and they were like across the hallway.
In the kitchen one time we were sitting there, all of a sudden the ice machine opened up and flung ice out of it. Like it never happens. We've never seen that happen before and it just flung right out of there. We like to joke around and say that it's Walter that's doing it.
Then it's off to check out our rooms. Mine looks pretty much like any room in an old hotel. No bleeding walls or anything. Although when I turn on my TV, a show about ghost hunting is on. After a late dinner, we meet back up to go exploring. The place is mostly quiet, and we search every nook and cranny of the 8 floors, hoping to see or feel something. In a few places, our recorders pick up a lot of interference, but that's about it. Then it's off to bed. Even though my room is rumored to be one of the most haunted, I slept like a baby, with none of the reported hair-pulling or ghostly banging, but it was a different story for Tessa.
So I was tossing and turning until about 2:30 this morning, and I was just about to doze off, and all of a sudden I got a really strong smell of stale cigarettes in my face. And so my heart started pounding immediately, So I definitely think there's something happening in this hotel.
All right, and that's 717 and 714?
Okay,
all right.
Maybe every old building is haunted by the memory of its years. Time has weight, and it forces old pipes to moan and foundations to creak. But here, maybe, just maybe, there is something more. Something that smells of tobacco and possesses a mischievous heart.
Okay, there you go. Pretty scary one.
Sure.
I like that. Doug in Lancaster, you've got a haunting story to tell, haven't you?
Yeah, one of my old favorites from when I was an undergrad at Whitewater. Pre-95, 96, before they redid the old higher hall, the 91.7 WSUW used to be up on the top floor over there. And I used to host a radio show over there on Saturday nights between 6 and 7, I think I remember, in my freshman year. And that was just kind of a spooky place to begin with because there really wasn't any classes or anything in that hall at the time. The only thing that was there really was the radio station. And, you know, a couple times up there you'd get a bat down the hallway or flying around the station once in a while. But the creepiest thing that happened to me is one time I, you know, being a freshman and not knowing how to switch CDs and play carts and all that stuff, I had a period where I had some dead air. And I swear I thought I heard some, like, spooky screaming amongst some static or something like that. I mean, it was just one of those moments that kind of took me back and didn't give me any, gave me a little pause and a little shiver in there. And, of course, you know, with the building being sold, legend popped up of people who had died there and haunted and whatnot. But just that little spark of dead air with the static and screaming or voices or whatever the heck I heard was enough to send a show up my spine.
Have you ever had an experience like that at all, Mike? Or?
I have not. You know, virtually, listening to the story about the Retlaw Hotel, virtually every old hotel in Wisconsin, and probably everywhere else, for that matter, has a ghost story associated. It's great stuff out there.
Yeah, great stuff. And that Retlaw, by the way, Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik, and it was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council, and wisconsinlife.org is where you can go if you want to learn a little bit more about that whole operation, which is really a good one and a lot of fun. And, oh, Gwen and Nina, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi.
We were talking earlier about the Outagamie County Cemetery. You have some information on that?
Yeah, actually, there's just an article in Sunday's paper, the Post Crescent. It was an editorial. And I work for a nonprofit company called Agape of Appleton. And some of my colleagues and I have started a project to kind of do some research on the cemetery and get a large memorial established. So far we have 133 names of people who were buried there.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, yeah, and some of them children. And then, you know, some of the plot numbers are doubled up on, and there's really very little information about where exactly the bodies are. So we were hoping to get one large memorial established with those 133 names engraved, and we've been looking for support from the community and donations and stuff like that. So,
the asylum itself was demolished, I think, in the 50s, wasn't it?
I think it was changed from the asylum to the Outagamie County Health Center.
So long-term health care facility, isn't
right,
it?
Right. And then that was destroyed in 2002, I believe. And then now it is Brewster Village was built on those grounds, which is kind of long-term care through the county as well.
Well, Gwen, I thank you very much for calling. It's good to know, get sort of the backstory on this. And also the work you're doing, too, which is great, great work, really.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, the cemetery, like you said, it is. It's just a flat piece of ground. I mean, you would never know that there's a cemetery there. There is the one sign that says Outagamie County Insane Asylum Cemetery, and it's actually spelled wrong. So, yeah. And then the Fox Valley Technical College has a semi training course that drives around the perimeter of the cemetery. So, you know, after visiting it, like I said, my colleagues and I just thought, oh, something has to be done. You know, it's totally forgotten about. Mm-hmm. And the tech, thankfully, has been mowing it since 2007. Previous to that, it was, I was told it was filled with garbage and high weeds, and nobody was really even aware that there were bodies there. So, so it's good that things are kind of in motion to pay tribute to the patients that are at rest there.
Yep. Gwen, thank you so much. Judith found the article that you mentioned, and we posted it up. We've got a link on my Facebook page. It's a comment on to today's show status, so people who have not seen that article that Gwen mentioned can go to my Facebook page and see it there. And while you're there, you can also see Mike B's book, Myths and Mysteries of Wisconsin. We've got a post of that, too, or a link to that as well. So, again, Gwen, thank you very much for calling. And Gloria in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, I live in Waukesha.
Yeah.
And we built a house in 1977, and my kids have seen ghosts in it.
Oh.
And I'm just wondering, I mean, because there was nothing on the land that we built on, how they would have gotten there.
Well,
there are paranormal investigators out there, and I believe there are some in southeastern Wisconsin. Have you tried contacting a paranormal researcher?
No, I haven't.
You might want to give it a try. There are several active paranormal researchers here in the state.
Yeah.
And I think there's a group in the Milwaukee or southeast Wisconsin area that would probably be very happy to check it out.
Yeah, be interested in it for sure. Gloria, thanks.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. I have to tell you, when I was about 8 years old, no, 9 years old, I woke up in the night and looked up and saw two ghosts, women, go kind of across the room and right through the wall. I looked out the window, and there was they were actually joined by another, and they were in the air. And at that point, I got scared, but I pinched myself, made sure that I was awake. And I can still picture them. I can still see those. I was a young guy, a young man, a young boy. But I've never forgotten that. And I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be. I think I mentioned it one other time on the show. No one's called me crazy yet, but I certainly know what I saw. So, yeah. Joyce and Nina, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I understand that the Riverside Cemetery in Appleton has a headstone with the name of Mary Blood on it, who died in the late 1800s, and supposedly her headstone bleeds every Halloween night.
Uh-huh.
And the Grand Opry House
in Oshkosh, yeah, right,
be haunted by a man, a young woman, and a dog.
Oh, a man, young woman, and a dog. And you've heard of those, Mike?
Oh, yeah. The Grand Opera House story in Oshkosh is fairly well known. Riverside Cemetery and the story of, I believe it was Mary Blood. I have heard of that. Riverside Cemetery, I believe, also has the distinction of being the burial place of Senator Joe McCarthy.
Oh.
Actually, that's St. Mary's Cemetery.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
But St. Mary's is on the river as well, isn't it? Isn't that located right on the riverside?
It's on the river, but it's a little more on the west side of town, and the riverside is closer to the eastern or central side of town.
What was the story involving Mary Blood?
It's very vague. All I know is apparently she lived here. That was her maiden name. She married into the Miller family. She apparently was on her way to Colorado on a trip because consumption was going around, the disease consumption. And apparently that's what she died from on the trip to Colorado. And, of course, she was brought back here and buried. So that's pretty much the whole story about her.
Very interesting. Okay. Thanks, Joyce.
Sure.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Another good story. Probably have time for another call or two. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Michael, in your book, well, we've talked about the headless banker. We've talked about the UFO encounter and the pancakes right. from space. But you've got some other interesting ones.
Some really interesting characters. And I couldn't help but notice here in the public radio studios, we've got a few pirates walking around. Wisconsin actually is home to Captain Dan Seavey, who is the only man ever charged with piracy on the Great Lakes. And what he did to get into a little bit of trouble was he stole a ship one night, a large schooner filled with cedar posts over in Grand Haven, Michigan. He drunk the crew under the bar and stole their boat, took it to Chicago, and for 2 weeks he eluded federal authorities in a Coast Guard cutter. And was finally arrested, brought in chains to Chicago, managed somehow to make his way out of Chicago. We can only imagine why the judge dismissed the charges. But at the time, in the early 1900s, piracy was still a capital offense on the Great Lakes. But, you know, commandeering a ship and eluding federal authorities for 2 weeks and becoming a celebrity could have been his greatest accomplishment. But yet it wasn't, because on the theory that it takes a cook to catch a crook, Seavey was then appointed a U.S. Marshal and ordered to close down illegal bootlegging activities on Lake Michigan. It's not sure if he continued as a marshal or as an outlaw, but he did serve in that capacity, one or maybe both of those capacities. There's a famous story that he killed a bootlegger in a Upper Peninsula tavern by dropping a piano on the man's head.
That's a great story. Megan in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Uh-huh.
My grandparents, my grandma Pat, lived in Whitewater. She grew up there. Her uncle built a house where the library stands now in Whitewater in 1824, 1826, I believe. The house, when he passed, he died in the house, and I have relatives that live there, my cousins. There was stuff that would be gone missing upstairs in their rooms. He had the library upstairs in his house. So I just always thought it was interesting. He liked to play, we always say Uncle Jim likes to play tricks on everybody and hide stuff from them.
Still is, apparently.
Oh, good story, Megan. Thank you so much. And maybe quick with Jeff. Jeff and Oshkosh, if you had a quick story.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I got just a strange story about my ex-brother-in-law. They were out in Amish country with his wife, and they were driving down a country road, and there was a gentleman coming at him, Amish man, long gray beard. And when they took the picture, he was coming right at him. Then when he had the picture developed, the cart was going away from him, and he couldn't explain it for the life of him. So, take the comment off the air.
Well, another good ghost story. I remember reading about a guy who was visiting Gettysburg and watched in the early morning a group of marchers, Union people marching, and he ten guys, I guess, and he went in. He was a writer. He went in and thanked the people there for sending somebody out to do that. And they said, "We didn't send anybody out there." Lots of strange stories, but you've got a bunch of good ones.
You know, folks up in northwest Wisconsin will probably recognize the name John Till. He was a backwoods miracle healer.
You're going to have to save that one.
Yep, okay.
But that's part of your book, and so that's a good one. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger.
Sure. John Till, miracle healer of Somerset.
And our guest today, Michael B., who is author of Myths and Mysteries of Wisconsin, a fun read. And I thank him for listening, for being here. And thank you for listening. And I hope you'll stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And happy Halloween.